Thank you for tuning into a podcast in our series, Real Life. Stay tuned for an inspirational exploration of dynamic experiences and insightful reflections on the highs, the lows life presents. TBS Now Radio brings you engaging content no matter where you are listening to this stream. Don't touch that dial as you journey with our presenter and guest today. Remember, this is a real-life podcast stream coming to you from TBS Now Radio. Stay with us as we uncover faith-based principles and practical ways to make a success of life.
In the United Kingdom, my guest today has risen from relative obscurity through a long story of numerous challenges and disappointments that have led him into providing inspiration to many, particularly those from deprived backgrounds, from broken homes, and people with learning and physical disabilities. He finds comfort in motivational talk and providing good leadership skills to formal and informal educational establishment. He does this also within faith groups and to young people and families from diverse backgrounds. Inspiration Youth Corps, IYC, is a motivational outfit founded by Chief that focuses on taking care of youth, especially those from unstable backgrounds, and inspiring them into becoming leaders of tomorrow, including those from challenging social and culturally deprived backgrounds and who have experienced significant inequalities in education. His experience in this regard has also resulted in the birth of a new outfit called Lazarus Ayo Oshunremi Ventures, based in Nigeria. Chief Ayo is a human rights activist and author. He's a livestock farmer and is a lover of nature. It is my pleasure to introduce to our audience today Chief Israel Ayodele Eniolunwanifise Oshunremi to Real Life with Femi Biwoye on the Tag Community Voice Radio. You're welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
It is our pleasure to have you in the studio with us today. So let's get straight into our conversation today. Please share with my audience, where were you born? I think we gave the clue out at the beginning.
That's right.
And what was your early life growing up in your family?
Well, I was born in the United Kingdom, London Borough of Islington, in the mid-1960s. And certain things happened in the process of coming into this world. It was a traumatic birth, basically, when my mother went into labor. It was quite a difficult one. She nearly died, and I was basically almost dead. And eventually, they managed to deliver me, and my right leg got affected, and my neck in the process. So, which meant I stayed in the hospital for weeks, leading on to months, and she was discharged a few days later. So, I think some months I was then fostered from the hospital. I went into foster care straight away. So that was the beginning of my own ordeal in life, challenges.
Was this an arrangement between your parents and the foster parties, or this was something that was forced?
I think my father was a highly educated man. My mother is a semi-literate. And there was the need for me to be in and out of hospital to correct certain things.
Okay.
The months preceding my birth.
I see.
And then my father was very much into his education and what he wanted to get. So I think in order to avoid any embarrassment or challenges for her, part of the arrangement was for me to be with someone who is educated and quite knowledgeable in that field. She was a carer,
yes,
and cares for children from diverse backgrounds. Although she's an English woman, white woman, who lives in Kent. So that's how I ended up with living in Kent for 4 years in foster care.
Okay. So, which part of Kent?
I can't remember now, but okay. I know it's in Kent. And I was there for 4 years, and there were times that we would come into London, myself and my younger sister, to visit our brother. But I really did not know my mother that much, and my father. I know they come to visit every now and then, but for me, the first 4 years of my life was grounded and put together by this wonderful woman, Mrs. Tocdale. I believe she must probably have passed on now. So, yeah. And then I think it was 1969. My father had completed his education, and hey, you know, in those days, in the 60s, you come here to study. That's what he came to do. And then the plan was to return back to Nigeria. So he came, and then he said he was going to go back to Nigeria, and then we were going to go with him. But my foster mother said no, that he could take my sister, but not me, because I had to go in and out of hospital. There was quite a lot of complex things happening. I couldn't speak properly. I couldn't walk properly. I was like driven like a machine. I isolate myself from children. And that is all subject to the traumatic nature of my birth, which was recorded, which was written. Obviously, I did not know about this until I was in my 20s. I just knew I was different from everyone else. So she objected to him taking me away, but he then came up with a story that he would take me to Nigeria just for a bit, just so that I know where I come from. Then
he went on one of those holidays.
Yes, so I call it a pretentious holiday to Nigeria. And then that pretentious holiday to Nigeria lasted 19 years.
Wow.
So that was the beginning of my own challenge in growing up in Nigeria. And my mother wasn't in Nigeria, obviously. She stayed behind in the United Kingdom. And then, obviously, things happened in life. They went on their separate ways. So I lived most of my life with my father.
Your father is, by your own admission, a very highly educated person. What was his background? What did he
study?
What was his profession? Yes.
Right. Discipline.
Yes.
He studied marketing and business operations management, the master's degree level here in the UK.
Okay, in the 60s.
In the 60s, and he was also in politics. It was one of those ones that followed Chief Awolowo very fondly. Actually, his coming to the UK was facilitated by Chief Obafemi Awolowo. So he was
part well connected.
It was part of the action group, and we know the hours, and then we were very, very close. So there was this notion of all of us, we have to be very highly educated, well grounded, well spoken, well read, and all those things that came with that. Yes.
Mm. What was it like to be separated from your birth mother?
I really don't have an understanding of to be honest with you, what the mother-son relationship was, because obviously I didn't really know my own mother. There's that distance relationship there, and then sadly that 56 years ago still plays up today. We by the grace of God, there's nothing that God can't do. So, but living in Nigeria and having different kind of my father was a man that loves his life, and then women, and then have all kind of stepmothers in and out of our life, really gave me a very difficult picture of what mother was. And then and the only time I experienced love, compassion, protection, was when I drifted to my father's side of the family, my father's senior sisters, whenever I was kicked out of the house because of my lack of, I don't know if we're going to get there, lack of progress educationally. So I really, to be honest with you, emotionally suffered from that childhood into my 20s in the hands of different kind of women.
Were you and your sister just the only two offspring?
Well, no.
Your parents' union?
No. We were three, but my father had other children before.
Oh, I
and
see.
Obviously, I didn't know that until we got to Nigeria. Then this battalion of other children started coming out of the woods, you know.
Okay.
And the thing is that
I say
battalion. There were three young men, and then I use that phrase often because they were highly educated, and we all look like him. So, but I was the only one that struggled educationally. And I just did not have an understanding of what to read, write, and anything. But put me on a football.
Were you dyslexic?
Back then, in the 70s and 80s and things like that, I was it was just perceived that I was dull, I was stupid, I didn't know what I was doing. And then, obviously, my father resented the fact that I was laid back. I finished secondary school when I was in my 20s. And then, then most children complete secondary school at the age of 15, 16. You know, so I was like a reproach, if you like, to the family, a black sheep of the family. So nobody wanted to associate with me. And I did not know what was wrong. I did not know. I could pronounce certain words, but some of them I couldn't pronounce. And my writing, I didn't know colors. I didn't know things. And then they would mock me the way I walk. I walked lopsidedly. I didn't even know that something had happened. I just know that my right leg is a bit funny. And then I know, but when I'm on the football pitch, it's a different game, different matter altogether, you know.
You play like Maradona.
I mean, I could have played football but my father, to the highest level. But he emphasized education. It's nothing but education for him. And I can understand where that is coming from.
Yes.
And I escaped from Nigeria. I say escaped. My mother had a hand in that somehow. In the late 80s, 1988, I came back to the United Kingdom.
Right.
But the damage was already done.
Mm. Okay, so you've talked about your relationship with your birth parents being particularly tenuous. And from what you say, you were dealt a particularly harsh childhood.
Absolutely, yes.
What lessons did you realize in later life?
You know, Femi, it's quite difficult because if something had happened to you, if it is a one-off, you can move on from that.
Yeah.
But if it is a prolonged trauma from childhood into adulthood, it almost shapes you into who you are not meant to be. Or maybe God has a hand in it somehow. So emotionally, for me, when I became a father, that was when I realized that the damage was quite significant, because it was very difficult for me to bond with my children, even though I'm a motivational speaker, I'm seen with other children and things like that. But my children would come and sit on my lap. I wouldn't push them, but it was very difficult for me to hug them, because I wasn't hugged. I wasn't told I was loved. So normally some people, if you have that kind of life, you almost believe that, say to yourself that, my own children will not go through what I've gone through. But psychologically, I did not see that I was already damaged. And that was just playing out in different ways in my life and in my marriage and in my children, even though I love my children to bits, you know. So the lesson for me later on in life, I realized how important foundation is. Foundation is significant. If you don't lay the foundation for that child, and if you don't address that situation very early on, you might produce a damaged adult to society. And this is one of the reasons when I had the opportunity to go and visit people, either in prison or things, I can see a lot of damaged men, you know, a lot of damaged individuals, complex to society. And then people don't understand until you sit down and begin to unpack their life. Then you know that something went wrong, you know. And the most, I say this often, the most challenge that people face in life is if you have a disability or learning difficulty, if it is invincible, that people cannot see it, but it's within you. Everybody does their things to get on with life, but you just find it difficult. Wow, that could be a mountain for you to climb. Particularly,
this is a particular pertinent point that we need to hone in on, that not all disabilities are visible.
Absolutely.
Not all disabilities can be seen.
Absolutely.
And so some people, sometimes people fight over parking spaces, and they see the disabled badge, for instance, and yet they still have this impression, this indignation, that he's walking, he seems to be okay, so why is he using a disabled bay? They expect you to be physically and visually handicapped, sitting in a wheelchair. So can you please address that viewpoint? Because it's important, because people are listening.
I think this is as part of, I can't necessarily blame people, and on the other hand, it's the level of ignorance as well. Because until you, I mean, I'm seated here now.
Yes.
I have a degree.
Yes.
And I'm pursuing some other kind of qualification and things have to be put in place for me to excel. I cannot do or toe the line like the majority.
Yes, because you're different.
I am in the minority. I have to sit in a classroom on my own. This was only put in place in the UK after I got myself, after I got into trouble with the law in Hackney. You know, some of the things that was done to me in Nigeria played out in the UK.
Right.
And it was then that I was referred to a clinical psychologist, and then the word dyslexia, ADHD, mild autism, and all those kind of things springed up. And they were able to amazingly go get information from my childhood, my baby time, which I did not know that, oh, okay, this happened in the process. Things were written there because of the trauma, because I was premature as well. I was put in this machine, what do you call it?
The incubator.
Yes, and all those kind of things. And subtle disturbance to the brain structure could leave you damaged. And on the other hand, if after all of that, all the mechanisms to bring that child up properly with love, compassion, emotion are in place, he or she probably will grow out of all those kind of things. But for me, there was none of those. There was absence from the father, absence from the mother, absence of love, absence of everything. So you are struggling, battling to understand, who am I? Why am I different from the rest? My father would take me to school, follow me to school, get me to undress in Nigeria. I went to 14 primary schools.
Wow.
And I can remember 5 of them, but there are 14 primary schools and 2 secondary schools, and get me to undress and beat me in front of everybody. So those kind of things played out. Psychologically, I could see them. Even when I returned to the UK and I started working, and then and I see people, like the way they interact with their boss, I couldn't even maintain an eye contact, because you're not to look at my father, because me particularly. So all of these things played out. And my own situation was invincible learning difficulty that I never knew until I was diagnosed with it. And then I began to understand. I thought myself, it would have been much more better maybe if my leg had actually broken and people could see. And maybe I could have jostled through life, had opportunities, had favor here and there. But whatever happened, happened for a purpose. I want to believe that. And then, I mean, my father was able to apologize before his passing and all the rest. But
did you forgive him?
Forgiveness is a must for you to move on. For my father's sake,
yes.
Forgiveness is a must. But I allowed things to linger on when it comes to my mother's side, my mother, and that affected me. Looking back now, if I could wind the clock back 15 years, my first book really went to town. I really wanted to tell the world
the story.
What happened to me. I mean,
what was the name of the first book?
Joy Comes Home, Triumph and Success Over Adversity. And the second one is Lazarus.
Okay.
Yes.
Triumph of Destiny.
Yes. So the first one there was really emphasizing what I went through. Now, it would have been fine if I had limited it to certain areas, but I went deeper. I wanted everyone to know. I mean, when God fights your battle, when God brings you through certain things,
yes,
and all of a sudden you arrive in a place that you never thought in a million years that you could be a CEO, and this person, where you become the best thing since sliced bread in schools. And that God has elevated you. What's the essence in now wanting to tell the world that, well, you know what, I had a horrible upbringing. You could say that, but when you begin to pick out people, you are saying to God that I can fight my battle now, I've got money. And God's hands taking off. And that took me in a different direction, and that had a devastating impact on me. So I had to go back to God and seek forgiveness and rely on this, which is why I've written a review of that book, and certain things are absent from this now. People enjoy reading this,
yes,
and I've got 18 other books to be published. So,
wow,
so
you're certainly busy.
Yes,
you got your hands full.
Yes.
Okay, so you are a youth leader of a growing community group.
Excellent.
Now this is taking you back again.
Excellent.
In time, because now you're an elder statesman, but you were,
if you say so,
at that point years ago. Your youth community group, Inspiration Youth Core, focused on dysfunctional youth and youth with learning difficulties. What was it like back then, managing youthful exuberance and the pressures of handling delicate relationships?
Well, let me just make a correction here. Inspirational youth corps focused on diverse issues.
Okay. Right?
Even we work with children who are academically sound, who comes from a very functional family, but they don't have motivation.
Okay.
Right. Inspirational Youth Corps also works with teachers who may find it very difficult to navigate their way through education, teaching in a classroom setting. So we do different kind of things, intervention and integration, working with chief executive of schools, how capacity building, how you can best get children to engage in a classroom setting.
Yes.
But because of my own life, where I'm coming from, majority of what I do as the CEO focuses on children who have learning difficulties or behavioral related issues.
Yes.
So, and I, back then, and even it's still relevant now, many of these children are kicking against what had gone on for them.
Yes.
But society itself do not quite understand where some of these children are coming from.
Yes.
So my strategy, our method that we use, is focused around play. We call it play mentoring. So when I get into a school setting, or I have to go to a police station to speak to a child, or within the home setting, I have games that we have come up with, we have devised, and we go in there, and I start by playing.
Okay.
Once you engage that child, once you bring him into your kind of world, or you sit on the floor, then, and they get into you, they know that they can differentiate between you and a formal setting. Because the most learning absorbed in life, pedagogy, science of teaching children, the most of learning is in an informal setting, not the formal one. Informal setting sets you up to function in a formal setting.
Yes.
Our home is an informal setting. The community is an informal setting.
Yes.
And when those institutions fail the child, it is then difficult for that child to navigate his or her way through formal settings.
Yes.
And the parents and society don't quite understand, and you come down on that child and you further destroy that child.
Yes.
So I take the opposite. I use play. I use sort of therapy approach.
Yeah.
And then we've seen a lot of volatile children who are very resentful. But once we step in, once I step in, I'm not in shirt and tie and suit, I'm in my jeans. I'm in my baseball hat, I sit on the floor. We have to have a way to engage with these children. And 9 times out of 10, majority of them come our way. And then you are able to start unpacking and deal with the issues at hand. That is where the system of education in any given society, particularly here in the United Kingdom, can be a little bit resentful for the work that we do. Now, how is it that Inspiration Educator has got this contract in school? And we have about 10 children who misbehave, but once I or his team, they're here, these children can function, they can behave. But some school can understand that, but some cannot understand because they're set in their own ways, the teachers in that institution. If majority of children are complying, if majority of children are following the directions, if the rules and regulations are not pushing the boundaries, so these children should equally toe the line. But you have to dig into why. Why? Nobody wants to fail. Something mitigates that.
Fantastic, fantastic. You are listening to Chief Ayo Oshunremi on Tag Community Voice Radio, and what a delight he's been. I'm going to ask you one question before we go on to a break. What pitfalls did you uncover in your early roles, and how much has the landscape changed since the 90s to date?
What pitfall for me? I go back to my background again. When you come from a place where, even though my father was a highly educated man, but we struggled in Nigeria financially and socially and all this, when you come from that background, when you don't have anything, and all of a sudden you find yourself in a place that things have changed, you started ahead, you might not necessarily know how to manage that. The fact that people saw me as the best thing since sliced bread almost got into my head, you know? And then it really played on the way I saw life. I navigated it myself through life.
So, we're going to go to a break now. Thank you very much, okay. Chief Ayo. When we come back from the break, we will look at some of the young people, some of the results that you've had as a result of the work that you've done. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Real Life with Femi Biwoye in the Tar Community Voice Radio. My guest today is Chief Ayo Oshiremi. Whatever you do, don't touch that dial. We'll be right back with you right after this break.
You are tuned in to a radio stream from TBS Now with Femi Ibiwaya. Inspirational, engaging, uplifting radio. Don't touch that dial.
Been so far. Chief Ayo, welcome back from the break.
Thank you.
Who are your most outstanding young people? Or out of all the people that you've worked with up till date?
We have quite a number of them. I cannot even begin to...
Okay, let me ask you a second question.
Mention names.
If you've been tracking their progress, where are they right now in their journey? If you could address all of that in the round, it would be great.
Well, we have a young man who was on the verge of being kicked out of school when he was in year, I think it was in year seven. And now he's a graduate, he has completed his university. Degree in which discipline? Mathematics.
Mathematics,
yes.
Okay.
And he was a young chap that had learning difficulties.
Wow.
Difficulties. And then we have another young chap who went into the army. And he's done really well with himself.
Hmm.
And we have one that actually played for Chelsea.
Fantastic.
So, and we have medical doctor.
Football player.
Yeah, football player. And we have medical. We have a medical doctor. So some of them
doctors.
Some of them have become friends. You know,
these are exceptional turnarounds.
Yeah, yes. Most of the young people that we've had impact, we've had to work with within the school and the community setting, have gone on to do great things in their lives.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it isn't about. And I've said this many. I said this many times. It isn't about. It is not about university. It's about fulfilling your God-given potentials. Education is a lifelong learning. It's a lifelong thing. So, whether you go to university or not, just you have to fulfill something. God hasn't created a waste. There is something deposited in each and every one of us. So some of these young people, they just needed somebody to believe in them and to show them a different path that they could follow. And our core values, the core values of inspiration, had dared us to help in many of these young people. And we used those to guide ourselves as we work with them. And which are just read out the core values to you. It's empathy.
Empathy
is number one.
Yes.
And when you move from, it's like a circle, really. Mm-hmm. When you move from empathy, you get into a point, into a zone of understanding that young person.
Mm-hmm.
And once you understand that young person, and the young person begins to have an understanding of you, then trust develops.
Mm.
Right? When trust...
Could you start that... That cycle again for us, so that we can actually really understand.
Okay, we have core values, and we work towards those core values, and we try to relate that to our young people. Whatever circumstances or situation that we find ourselves, those young people are in, those core values are things that hold us dear. And what the first one is empathy. You have to pretend or understand where that young person is coming from. Empathy is key to working with any young person or family. Once you are able to get on that journey, you get into a zone of understanding where that person is coming from, and that person understanding where you are coming from in your conversation, in your journey through mentoring. Once that is cemented, you get into a point where they understand where trust develops. Because when you trust somebody, then honesty kicks into it. Honesty is the next one. Then no matter what that young person had done, right, either right or wrong, because there is trust and there is honesty, they are able to open up to you. So once you get to a place of honesty, then the next one is responsibility. How do we change this situation? Who does what? The school has to be taking responsibility for certain things. The father has to take responsibility. The mother has to take. And more importantly, the young person equally has to take responsibility. Then once you take responsibility, the next one is empowerment. Responsibility leads to you being empowered. Then, wow, so I can actually read. Wow, so I can actually wake up at a certain time. So I'm actually this kind of person that I can do certain things that I have thought psychologically, because they've told me that I'm a waste of space. Actually, I am not a waste of space. That's empowerment. So once you get empowered, then belief kicks into it. You will start to believe in yourself. You have to have that internal belief that actually I can do certain things. And once that is possible, that is achieved, then what is often said to be impossible becomes possible. That is the last of those core values. So those core values, we take them forward with us wherever we go. It is always at the back of our minds.
Fantastic. Your heart and your feet seem to be pointed at Nigeria. What is the vision there?
Well, Nigeria today, one has to be very careful what to say. Because I don't know how to what extent freedom of speech now is. Even though we are in this dispensation that we are in now, where you say things and then you can be held and then not allowed to do what you
have to do. Isn't freedom of speech enshrined in the Constitution?
Because I'm drifting gradually into politics as well, and I don't want to sound a politician, but I believe that we are all politicians, directly or indirectly. If you are a Nigerian, you are a politician, because we are affected positively or negatively by what's happening on ground in Nigeria right now. So I go back to Nigeria quite often, and I'm going pretty soon.
Okay.
And my mission to Nigeria is to go into most of all the schools, if you like, that I've been through, where I was told that I'm a waste of space, where I was told that I would never amount to anything, help them to see a different child. Not me, the children that they are educating right now. And many of these schools, none of them are private schools. They're state schools. And when you walk into the premises of those schools, you know that how can children, especially if you have the kind of complex life that I had, survive, graduate from this kind of settings?
Can you, because some of our audience are Africans, especially because some of them are Nigerians as well.
Right.
And some of them may be able to identify with some of the schools that you're talking about.
Right.
And much more importantly, because some of them should have a responsibility.
Right.
To doing something to affect change in some of those places that they have gone through, or they may be affiliated to, or that they can impact for positive.
Right.
Please give us more insight into your experiences with these schools.
What I do essentially is go back and deliver workshops.
Okay.
To teachers, how best to teach children.
Yes.
Not beat them, mm-hmm. not call them names.
Mm-hmm.
And I give them.
Can that work in Africa?
Well, to a degree, the schools that I have been in, mm-hmm. Some of these teachers, by the time we finish with them, are covered in tears. Because what they have perpetrated is a vicious circle. That is the way they were raised.
Mm.
So they're educating their children that way. And they can identify a number of children that may be perceived to be what we call them olodo. And I get this notion to
Olodo means dullard.
That somebody is dull.
Mm.
That there is no, God hadn't created a waste of space. God hadn't created somebody that is dull.
Mm.
We, society, create dull people.
Mm.
We stigmatize them. We create them. This is why we have some of them living their life out as bandits and all kinds of things today, because some of them have been failed by the educational system itself.
Mm.
And when they find themselves in a different dispensation, then power. They have this kind of power that they didn't have in a formal setting. And they come for people like you and I. And let you and I know that actually they have the power now, and they suppress us. Because society, by and large, the educational system has suppressed them. In fact, have marginalized them to a degree. So we go into the schools, and I have friends that pay, mm-hmm. sponsor me to go into some of their schools who are here, that say, oh, please go to Nigeria, help us. So we help them to build classrooms,
yes.
science block, and textbooks, and how best to diagnose children that may have dyslexia, may have ADHD, may have autism, or because all of these things are, well, Nigeria is getting the grip of it now, unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
To a certain degree in Nigeria, all they need is that you have some sort of spirit in you. So they begin to beat that child.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time I sit down with them,
and I take you to take the child to a prophet.
Yeah, that happened to me. You, imam. I mean, if you had gone through my first book, that happened to me. you know. So I was told that I was in a cult or something. Some people were zapping my intellectual.
Taking your glory.
Yeah. So as a result of that, I had to eat certain things. That wasn't the truth. It's a certain thing that had happened, and also you don't have to have had a traumatic birth. Your social
setting. Your father was educated. Did he believe in all these fetishes?
No, he didn't. He just beat me the more. He said, "You beat knowledge into you." But it was later on, and I came back here, that we began to talk, and I went home, and I then everything could have got the understanding got to him that wow, this is actually, because when I went to university, and I went to University of East London, he was shocked. How did you get into university? You can't even spell university. So things were put in place for me that even I surprised myself. I was surprised. I had to learn to read. I had to learn to type. I have to learn to lip text. I have to learn different things. And that's how I got to know Richard Branson, because Richard Branson is equally dyslexic. You know, most of these world-renowned people who are very hands-on, they have one learning difficulty or the other, but most of them are genius. So most dyslexic people are very, very genius. I did not know that. So what I was able to survive through secondary school to primary school to a degree because I was very outspoken, because of my activities to do with sports and those kind of things sort of helped me. But many of the children, some of the children back home in Nigeria, are just there in the classroom. So my presence, when I'm going
Describe a typical classroom that gives you concern. Describe a typical situation that really touches your heart when you see those conditions in the pupils.
It makes me cry.
Okay, so please, you
go into a classroom, number one, classroom setting. You see children packed like sardine.
How many in a
I'm talking
class,
about 60, classroom. 70, 80. Okay.
What sort of and class then, size?
And I can't. A class size, space, they're squeezed. I can't. Okay. They're squeezed.
So we have in 30. In the UK, how many people
in a classroom here
would be in a similar size?
I think in the UK class, here, if my memory serves me right, it's about 2022.
In the classroom,
or
60.
A little bit more than that. Much more. 100.
100?
Yes.
100. Okay. 100. So up to 5 times.
Yes. Yes, I can't record them because I'm trying to help the school so that the head teachers and things don't get
these
into trouble.
Are free government funded schools.
Schools, okay. No doors. Potholes in the classroom.
Potholes
in the floor.
You mean cracked floors?
Yes, that's okay. What I mean. Some of these children
are
writing.
Do they have blackboards?
It's nothing to write home about.
Okay, are they physical blackboards or do they just paint the wall?
There are some of them, they paint the wall. That's it.
Right.
They paint the wall. So you go into those kind of settings. When it rains, learning stops.
Why?
Because the breeze and the thing gets into the classroom.
So water gets into the classroom.
Yes. And sometimes the student might not even be able to go to school. Not all the schools are like that, though. There are some schools that the old students have kind of, like what I'm doing, upgrade and help them out. But you see, those things that a child needs to flourish, to learn properly, if they are absent.
Yeah.
For example, there's a school, they teach them computer science, but there's no computer in the school. Not one, but they teach them by textbook.
Okay, so
no computer
at all. How do they learn to click?
They teach them by textbook. They're just looking, they're reading from textbook. And then you wonder when many of them go to university or whatever and finish, they are incompetent. And we find many of them in Nigeria today that are incompetent because the educational system itself has failed them. Many of these children are not well groomed, they are not well grounded with things that they need to that will enable them to flourish.
Wow.
You know, so you have that, and you have a typical classroom where some children are sat at the back. They look malnourished. You know, and you can see the school uniform that they're wearing. You can see some of them are looking so pale, and they're supposed to assimilate. How do you assimilate? And some of these children also, they are there to listen. The teacher is teaching and talking at them.
Yeah.
But in the UK here, it is a matter of interaction.
Yes.
It is a two-way thing. Children in the UK here, they have the right to constructively challenge a teacher. In Nigeria, you don't challenge. You don't try, you just sit there and absorb. If you are brilliant, fortunate, you are fortunate. If you are not, you are lost. So that is the kind of we want to change that dynamic. That teacher, you have to befriend these children.
Okay.
You have to understand where these children are coming from. They are not all equal. The only way you can bring equality is to know that people are not equal. That's the only way you can promote equality.
How much of the Nigerian experience is also visible in other countries in Africa? Or is Nigeria in a particular
No. It's a syndrome in Africa, isn't it? It cuts across.
Okay. Is that governance or corruption?
Partly corruption, mainly. Partly corruption. And also, the system is manufactured to be like that. It's designed to be like that because some of them want to deliberately run down the public schools so that parents will take their children to the private schools. Some of these private schools are owned by politicians. Some of them are owned by top people. So, and you know, an average Nigerian father, mother, if he has his faculty intact, want the best for his child.
Yes.
So if you see that, if you know that a public school is not going to serve the purpose for my child, I will go and look for a best of the best private school. That in itself is even a competition in Nigeria. Which school does your daughter go to? Which school is your son in? Or this private school? And because there are layers of private school. There's a private school who rival schools in the UK.
Right.
They rival that they're one of the best. Some schools in the UK cannot near them in Nigeria, but you're paying through your nose.
Yeah.
It is the daughter and son of who is who in Nigeria would go to such schools or university.
Yeah.
But the greater majority, over 90%, land crash on the public school. They're squeezed through that.
So this is what you describe is essentially what I would term as a cartel of education. Just like there is a cartel, a drug cartel, and there's a mafia cartel,
absolutely,
and so on and so forth. So they set up the system in order to keep some down and to promote the interest of some of the others for their own particular ends.
That's right.
And therefore, inequality increases.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And the gap is massive. The gap between the poor and the rich in Nigeria, you could smell it, you could touch it, you could see it.
Okay, we're going into politics now. Let's see. Let's come back. What skills, talents, and disciplines are required to attain optimum levels of performance in any field of endeavor?
Communication.
Yes.
It's very key.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to be able to adapt.
Okay, adaptability.
Adaptability, right? Flexibility,
yes,
okay, and then determination.
If you are not determined, because this
field of mentoring, working with children, can sometimes be very discouraging, particularly if you keep going to a child and things are happening all the time. You think you've fixed that child. He or she goes home and everything crumbles again.
Yeah.
And then you get a phone call. Or you go to that school, you do X, Y, Z, and you go, thank you, Ayo. And they throw a lot of money at it here in the UK. And then the following day or week later, the same set of children have committed another sort of offense or crime within the school.
Yeah.
If you are not called or committed or dedicated and have the resilience, it is very easy to give up. And that is not what we do in inspiration. You don't give up on any child.
Yeah.
You keep going. And that is why play mentoring is the key to getting into the world of some of these children, even adults as well. So those skills are very, very important, and I know them because I find it difficult to adapt myself. Yeah. I find it difficult to be flexible myself. And I know now that flexibility takes you a long way.
Yes.
You have to understand what things are happening, things are changing. We are in a fast moving world now. If you don't catch up with it, you'll be left behind.
Yeah.
And then what we teach, functional skills. Functional skills means you break things down to smaller stages for some children. Some children, you can pack it and give it to them. Some children, like somebody like me, an adult, you can't pack things and give it to me. It has to be broken down. There are many adults like that. There are many children like that.
Yes.
Having an understanding and friendship. Open that dialogue of communication between the teacher, social worker, and the young person. Takes that young person a long way. They begin to value themselves because what they need, that's what I did not have. A conversation with my dad, where you sit down and have a banter. Never. That never happened. Never had a banter with my mom. Oh, mom and son, mom. No. And you are shaped by those things, by those experiences. And then you go into the school system. The school setting is hostile to you because you are not academic. You know, in Nigeria, if you are not academic, you suffer. Yeah. You'll suffer.
Who are your mentors?
Well, some of them sadly have passed on. Some are still alive. Richard Branson as a distance, but I don't know him personally. But I've written to him a few times. And got so good, they do reply. Mm-hmm. So he's somebody that I look up to. He dropped out of school, but we know Richard Branson.
Yes,
today there's a great king in Nigeria that I am very close to. The Alaki of Egbaland, of Agbadibo. He's a great man. He's my mentor. You're talking about humility, somebody that is humble, somebody that treats people on their level. That's one man, that's the king. You know, whenever I am in Nigeria, well, apart from God, I feel God is the greatest protector of his children.
This man, he
sends people to pick me up and still does that. So he's a mentor. And the Chief Oluokewo is another man. I don't know him personally, but I followed his life story. He's somebody that inspired me. There's another man called Baba Jebu, Adebutu Kesintin. I follow him a lot. These are people that come from nothing to become somebody. And I follow their life. And how they have been able to, Eleganza Okoya is somebody, he was my father's boss because my father worked for him.
Okay.
The man is not as highly educated, but look at what he had become.
Mm.
And again, resilience, determination, and God gives you blessings on your life. It takes you a long way. And you have to surround yourself with the people that will challenge you, that will tell you what you want to hear and what you don't want to hear.
How easy is it to be told what you do not want to hear?
It is not easy if particularly if you are vulnerable, particularly if you have low self-esteem. When they tell you what you don't want to hear, it could go one way or the other. It's either you dismiss yourself from that setting, and if you do that, you run away. You will keep running forever. But when you stay there, you hear, because some people they don't have your best intentions. There are people like that.
Yeah.
They will tell you things to demoralize you, which is why I like our core values. Once a child or a person begins to know who you are, if you know who you are, it doesn't matter what somebody else says. Yeah. What God says about you counts.
Absolutely.
Counts. Joseph is our classical example in the Bible. What that man went through and how God used him.
Yeah.
And then what he did in the end with his brothers inspired me. He said, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good.
Yes.
So an entire nation, God brought them through as a result of what he did in the life of Joseph.
Absolutely. Looking back on nearly two decades of social work, are there any insights that you can share with the younger stallions who are, you know, panting behind you, who are coming up behind you?
Coming up behind me in what sense? To become mentors?
Yeah, to become mentors, to work in this area,
and to
address some of the issues that you have been a trailblazer and a pioneer.
I say this to people. Some people go into mentoring or teaching are motivated by money. By money. Some people go into it for that, and I don't blame them. Some people are drawn into it by circumstances, and some people are called. For me, my entire life have pointed me in that direction, that God wants to use me there. You have to first and foremost discover who you are, to know who you are, what you want to do. What you want to. I wouldn't do any other thing. Okay, I'm doing things along the line. I'm a farmer and things like that. But mentoring is the key for me. So, and you have to be driven. In order to get to where you need to, you have to be driven. You have to accept that there will be setbacks. If you go into mentoring or whatever adventure you go into, and all you're thinking of is that this is going to take me to greater heights in life. When you don't consider that, there will be times that you will have setbacks. That when that setback happens, that could completely destroy you. That you might not be able to pick up the pieces again. And I say this to children, to families, to parents: do not bury your head in the sand. Just because you have failed or struggled as a father or as a mother, some people want you to finish. They would rather not want to hear your voice again. Don't bury your head in the sand. The best thing to do, if you had had a relationship with your children that have not been perfect and things that happened, dust yourself down. Reflect. Ability to reflect will take you forward. And because this is life. And then move forward. If those children do not forgive you or do not want to have anything to do with you. The most important thing is that you, the change that there needs to be comes from you first. And what happens eventually to a young person or a child, people will begin to know that actually, you know what, Ayo or Femi or whoever has changed. Do you know what he's doing now? Despite the challenges that he had, he has moved on. But if you get stuck, like what happened to me some 15 years ago, in what happened to me growing up, this person did this, that person did that, you will never move forward. You will never move forward. And that's my advice to many of our young people today. If you're following mentoring, if mentoring is your thing, or you want to go into social work, or you want to become a DJ, whatever you want to become, you have to have a clear clearly identify that role and speak to yourself. Is this a calling? Because I believe if we are called, that could take you a long way. It could take you a long way. And setbacks should actually prepare you for a...
to be springboard.
Yes, to move forward. A springback, to bounce back. That's the word. Bounce back and be the best that you can be. Never allow circumstances of life to suppress you. That is what the adversary wants. You shouldn't give in to that, to them.
Thank you so much. You've been listening to Chief Ayo Oshiremi on Real Life with Femi Ibioye. We're going to go to a break and we'll come back for our final segment. Whatever you do, please keep listening. Do not touch that dial.
Thank you.
You are tuned in to a radio stream from TVS Now with Femi Ibioye. Inspirational, engaging, uplifting radio. Don't touch that dial.
So far. Chief Oshiremi, welcome back to Real Life with Femi Ibioye.
It's a pleasure.
So, before the break, we... asked you a question about giving advice to people who are coming after you.
That's right.
And you talked about people really having a heart for it and people not doing it for commercial reasons. Okay. Did you want to add anything to that?
I just wanted to say part of what I do or what we do in Inspiration and Lazarus, the other organization in Nigeria.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people get in touch with me to come to their church, to come to their community here in the UK or Nigeria. This trip to Nigeria, which is going to happen soon, has been all paid for. Mm. Right? We go in to help and inspire. We have all kind of topics that we have built through PowerPoint. We use PowerPoint to inspire children, young people, fathers.
Yeah.
Because I'm a father, I meet a lot of broken fathers because I, as a father, was broken.
Mm.
And you know, in order to get to be a fulfilling father, you have to face the fact. You have to face the truth. And it is your foundation that mitigates where you find yourself, some of them. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people deal with issues in schools that they have their son maybe or daughter maybe in school and struggling here in the UK. And they want somebody to be the link between the home and the school. So we go into school and we address those issues. We help them to put strategies in place in the school. Because once the school knows that somebody is there, that knows what he or she is talking about, they sit up.
Mm-hmm.
Because to a degree, the educational system here, even in the UK, can fail some of the children.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this for the record, majority of the children that we have mentored and we continue to mentor, 97% of them are white.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that is because of the geographical location where we are situated.
Yeah.
But because people have this conception when they see me that, oh, he's a black man, he must be African children. That we do have African children from that have Caribbean children, but not as many as we would like, because some of the issues they see as a taboo.
Yeah.
They don't discuss those things.
Mm.
And I tell people where I have failed, and that is my starting point. It relaxes them.
Mm-hmm.
It relaxes them. Fathers, mother, look, don't think I'm coming here to flesh my muscle, to tell you that what's not. I have struggled as a father. I have struggled as a husband. I have struggled as a son because of certain things happened to me. But you don't have to struggle anymore. These are things that needs to be put in place. That child, that son, that daughter of yours is not a waste of space. So we do that, and we go to churches, and sometimes it's a standstill. You find some pastors even come in tears. Now, what you've said today resonates with me. That's where I'm coming from. They say that on a one-to-one. And people do refer. They need to come and meet with their family on a one-to-one or sometimes in a group setting. And I thank God that this is now happening on a higher level now in Nigeria. Obviously, most of the schools that I go to in Nigeria are private schools. They pay for it. But when I then get that fund privately, I then the private fund, I then
you go then to, push it back into the public sector. Schools,
because for me, that is where
the
it's not just the mission, it's where the real work is. And a public school.
That's a mission.
Yeah, it is a mission, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so juggling work, family, church, various missions must take exceptionally long hours. Mm-hmm. What do you do to ensure that you get timely, well-deserved breaks? Because you seem like a man that is always on the go.
First and foremost, I want to say this. I am severely dyslexic and I've got ADHD. You know, ADHD is about you're hyperactive, you're constantly. So when I'm relaxed, completely relaxed, something is wrong. So it's completely the opposite for me. I have to be seen to be doing something constantly. That probably has a lot to do with what happened to me as in childhood. I don't know. So when people say, oh, you're so quiet today, something is going on. But when I find myself in crisis, that challenge is here and there, that's when I write.
Activities.
Well, sometimes there are challenges. Let me use the word challenges. When I find a challenging situation, the best comes out of me.
Okay.
When I enter into a school and a teacher calls me and said, look, I think we're going to be taken to court because this parent. I said, just let me have a chat with the parents. That's a crisis for that school.
Mm-hmm.
And the crisis is dissipated once I get involved because I thrive on that. So that for me. So and to relax, sometimes I like to be with my when I'm in Nigeria. I like to be amongst my animals. I've got them in my compound.
Okay, so tell us about your animals.
Well, I'm following in my grandfather's footsteps. My grandfather was a shepherd, you know.
Okay.
So animals they don't discriminate. You see, and they love me. Once I'm at the gate, they all run around. So and I said to people that is now I want to spend my remaining days amongst them when I. I will be 56 on Monday. So,
congratulations.
So thank you very much. So and home is calling me. I've done my UK now. Home is calling me. So I want to spend 70 to 80.
Why do you keep saying home? You are British. You are born here.
Look.
You are born here. So your home is here. And your home is also there. You have your ancestral home. And you have your birth home.
Well, for me, number one. Nigeria is home.
Okay, so you're when ancestrally...
Number one, Nigeria is home. But there's no way you can write the story of my life and exclude Britain.
Yes.
This country, I was made here, I was shaped here, I was formed here.
You are diagnosed here.
But I was diagnosed here. But the manifestation of whatever is left in me is meant for Nigeria now.
Okay.
You see, I continue to do whatever I'm doing here in the UK. I can never leave the UK. My children are here.
Mm.
Okay, they've grown up, they are now adults, they're doing their own thing. But my children are here. But Nigeria is calling me. I am when yeah, I when,
children
when,
are when, calling you.
Well, maybe I will have more children. You never know. You never know. You never know. That's the reality. You never know. So whenever I'm in Nigeria, what I do now is much more appreciated because I am bringing the British system way of education into Nigeria's system of education, and I'm telling them that this is not the way to. You don't beat a child. You don't call child name, children name, to the point that some of these children are even beaten. You can see scars on them, on their back. Mm. Like me, I show them. I still carry some of these things. It shouldn't be like that. Mm. So Nigeria, in that sense, for me, and Ghana, you see, all those kind of countries, even Africa, there's the need for a mindset that is shifting away from pressure on children.
Paradigm shift.
Yes. In terms of education.
Mm.
Education is a lifelong learning thing.
Mm.
It's not only university. You can, I worked in Nigeria when I dropped out at one point of school as a bus conductor.
Wow.
That's in my first book. I worked at a bus conductor. Now, I couldn't do mathematics.
Which
in
Ibadan. Town?
In Ibadan. Yes.
Okay.
In Ibadan. So when I skipped school, I used to work as a bus conductor. My life was a colorful one. colorful one, so detrimental that you when I go into my life story, you will not believe the person sitting here. You know, there are times that my father kicked me out of the house. When we had people like Bola Ige and the rest of them to visit us, I will be asked to disappear because they don't want to see me because I look exactly like my father. And they will want to know, oh, which institution is this one now? Well, how is it? What is it? Is it the one that you had in England? I was nowhere. I was land crashing in the I was struggling at the back. So I was ashamed to the family.
But thank God things have changed.
I've changed.
So we were talking about taking well-deserved breaks before you took us on that journey. And I just followed on the journey because I was enjoying the scenery.
Right.
However, let's come back to, because this is important, so that you don't burn out.
Right.
And so that we have Chief Ayo Oshunremi
right
for years and years and years to come. You are still a physical human being, still subject to the same challenges physically
right
as every other flesh and blood. So we're talking about you taking out time out of your diary to chill. We're talking about you taking holidays with your family or with your friends or with your homies. We're talking about you scheduling actual me time during the week when you disengage from the youth, you disengage from the schools, you disengage from even the animals, because the work of a shepherd is to tend, which is labor. So we're talking about you in your rest space. What is going on there? And what if you haven't been doing it, are you going to be looking into doing that going into the future for the sake of keeping you here to do more?
Right. I said I am a prisoner of conscience. Right. My rest.
No, you're not Nelson Mandela.
Sorry. my rest when I'm sitting in my compound at home, either in Ijebudi or Ibadan or Abeokuta, amongst nature.
Yeah.
And enjoying the breeze and seeing these animals run up and down. And when I pick up my pen, now I'm dyslexic, or I pick up my dictaphone and I begin to write from what I can see in and around me, that relaxes me. Particularly the last 3 years, I've written books that I never thought I would write. So for me, I know where you're going. When I go to Nigeria, people say I'm going on holiday. They think I'm going on holiday. For me, when I go into school, when I'm at home within my compound and I see these animals running around, that is my own form of relaxation. Okay. Or sometimes I just stay in bed. Mm-hmm. I stay in bed and I don't get up. I just stay there, relax, till about 12 or 1 o'clock, in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't necessarily wired up to think, oh, I'm going to go for this holiday, things like that. And I think that is part of my own learning difficulties, challenges. I think so.
Do you get any counseling?
Counseling, you get packages in place for me, for people like us, a lot of us, not just me. Because dyslexia is not, you don't get cured for it. It's like you have one leg and you think that leg is going to grow back. You just manage to navigate your way through. Things are in place, particularly here in the UK. Things are in place, and those things that I have in place is what I'm taking to Nigeria. That if we have 1, 2, 3, 4 children, put this in place, you will see a different child.
Fantastic. Your children are all grown up by your admission and by listening to your story so far. They're all leading their own lives. Does any of them take after you?
You see, my oldest daughter, when she speaks,
yeah,
he captivates an audience.
Mm.
And I can see that from my father to me and to her.
Mm.
Right. So in that aspect, she's taken after that. She's got some sort of trace of her father in her.
Yes.
My second daughter, she runs. She's into sports.
Okay.
So yet again, she's taking that side of me.
Mm.
My son, however,
yes,
my son, it's completely the opposite. Of obviously, he plays football. That it takes that from me, but he's very quiet, very reserved.
Yeah.
So when he's upset and he says something, it must have been pushed.
Mm.
But whilst my first daughter she doesn't say things straight away as well. She takes her time before she says things. But my second daughter, she's just like me. She will tell you there and there. and it is done, over, and she moves on.
Yeah.
But my son, sports and things like that, he's in the university now studying mathematics. Okay. So he, I mean, thank God for their mother. They have a wonderful mother. And that is one thing that, for whatever the case is, I will always thank God for. She is phenomenal in their life. And what I did not have, and what I lacked, the combination of it came out of her to those children. Which is why globally, mothers are often talked about more than the father. But I know that a lot of fathers had gone through challenges of their own, which is why some African men particularly were formed and shaped the way we are. But we cannot live in that age. We have to go out and seek help to unpack, to become the person that we need to be, that God has created us to.
Okay, so you talked about African men. Now I want to ask you a question about honors. How did you accept a chieftaincy title in Nigeria? What is the significance of that honor to a community leader who has made his mark in the diaspora rather than locally in Nigeria?
Nigeria is my home. I was given an award here as well by the Queen. I was given the High Sheriff Award many years ago.
Congratulations.
Right? That's many years ago.
Yeah.
But for me to be given the Are Ashuadwe of Eba Land by the
Are Ashuadwe. Can you translate what that is?
It means the leader of the youth. Simple. The leader of the youth, the voice of the youth, somebody that works with the young people, right? To be given that for me, and particularly in my state of origin, Ogun State, and the town, Abeokuta, where my father's mother comes from, it means a lot to me. And it's not just, let's give you this title, let's give you this title because of you, maybe whatever. It just typifies the job that we do in school. Because how I got to know the Alake of Eba Land is I went to Songwater High School. I completed my secondary education at Songwater High School. I spent 4 years there. So I went in there in 2009 or 2008 there about to help the school. And somebody somehow introduced me to the Alake. And Alake asked me what I was doing in Nigeria. I went with some teachers from here, some English teachers to go into my school to help out. And then I told him. Then he hired some other schools. He said, if you can go and talk in this school, do a motivational thing in this or that school. We went, and then from then on, the school started talking to Kabis. Now, where did you get this man from? Our children, some of these children that were laid back, they are now forthcoming. They're now speaking. What? So that's how it started. So he started calling me jokingly. Then that then went on. Then I accepted the chieftaincy title over ten years ago.
Did you actually do an Iwuye?
Yes, it is an honorary title.
It's an honorary title
because it is an honorary title.
Okay.
Leader of the youths. So we have to do we in terms of celebration, party, and things like that. Where you is it? They call it Ashwebi or whatever. Where you have we have to go and do that. And there are, I don't want to go into it. There are two more towns now. Two more obas that is asking to give me this, because I do something in their community.
Okay.
And when a king says to you that we want to give you, you can't turn around and say to the king, no, I don't want it.
Yeah. They'll banish you from the kingdom.
Sorry.
I'm just joking. You don't need to respond to that. So life is a preparation for heaven. If you had a bucket list, what would you put in it?
I like to watch football. Right. And my favorite football team, goes without saying, I was born in Eastleigh in Highbury, Arsenal. Okay. We're not doing well at the moment. So I will have recorded matches of Arsenal where they've won, not lost, to take with me.
Why not the lost?
Right, right now, talk about Arsenal.
Football
right
is
now.
A religion. Okay, we'll talk about Arsenal.
And I would like to take my children's pictures with me.
No, I'm talking about before you die. What do you want to do before you die?
Oh, what I want to do before I die?
Yeah, you can't take those things.
Okay. What I want to do before I go to meet the Lord. Okay. I think I'm doing it. But one of those things that we started, and I don't want to say too much about it, is to build a school.
No, we're not talking about legacy.
Right.
You would do all of that anyway.
Amen.
So we're talking about what enjoyable thing. Do you want to jump out of a plane? Do you want to buy a Ferrari or a speedboat?
I like to learn to play the trumpet.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm always fascinated when I see people play it, and I wonder how. And also
trumpet, sax, or
trumpets. That's class of
wind.
Yes. And then the drums.
Okay.
Yes.
Fantastic.
If that you're talking about leisure time, if I can, if that can be my leisure time, where I get somebody to teach me those things, that would be something phenomenal if I can achieve that.
Fantastic. We're coming to the end of the show now. When you want to give a shout out to anyone at all, who would you like to give a shout out to?
I wouldn't mention names. I would just say for all of those people who have inspired me.
Mm.
And all of those people who have also seen the other side of me, who have kind of said to me, and I mean this in a positive way, that you're never going to amount to anything. Because whatever they said, I've turned around. Because sometimes you need to be knocked down. And this is what I'm saying, this is what I've said to you, and I say to people, the way I analyze things is completely different from the majority. So for those people that have been there, that have motivated me, that have encouraged me, like the Alaki of Egbaland, you know, many other people that are friends, yes, I want to give a shout out to them. I'm grateful to them. I'm grateful to a dear brother who we're quite close to. I don't want to mention his name. And I'm grateful to my children, you know. They've not given me cause for concern. They're wonderful children, wonderful, great children. In fact, I would say that they are my motivation, you know. They're my motivation. So, and I said it to my mother, even though the relationship is not perfect, she's still my mother. And I believe that time will heal. Time will heal. If she didn't give back to me, I won't sit here.
Any final thoughts?
It's been a wonderful journey. Great one. And many more yet to go. Particularly, I say this, in Nigeria. Nigeria, here I come.
Right. You've heard it all from the man himself, Chief Israel Ayodele Eniuluanifise Oshuremi. Our guest speaker today is, by his own admission, the prisoner of conscience and somebody whom the Lord is making use of in different ways. It has been a tremendous pleasure and privilege to have you on the show with us today. And until the next time that we come your way, it is Femi Ibiwoye on Real Life in the TAG Community Voice Radio saying, have a very lovely weekend, and whatever you are doing, please keep listening to the Thorough Community Voice Radio.